The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning round, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and saw where he was staying and spent that day with him. It was about the 10th hour. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who had heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. The next day Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth, can anything good come from there?" Nathanael asked. "Come and see," said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, "Here is a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false." "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." Then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus said, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You shall see greater things than that." He then added, "I tell you the truth, you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man."
Well, it's great being with you. And as already been said, my name is Michael Harvey. And as you can tell, I don't come from around these parts. So do we need any dual translation this morning? Or we'll just about get away with it. Good, excellent. That's fantastic. The year was 1962. Two young people, just out of their teenage years, and Jackie and Orrick. Jackie and Orrick were in love, and they used to meet in at Bellevue, where there was a fun fair where all the young people used to meet in those days. And they were so much in love, but then there became a problem. Jackie got pregnant. And she knew this was going to be a real difficulty, because her mother was not going to like it at all. So she kept the information from her mother as long as she possibly could, until it became obvious. And Jackie's mother went absolutely spare, and there were big arguments and big rows, and blood pressure levels went sky high, and until in the February of 63, a boy is born. And Jackie's mother says, "He's mine." Well, Jackie and Orrick continue as boyfriend and girlfriend and continue their relationship until, oh dear, no, pregnant again. Didn't quite learn the first time. But this time, Jackie's mother said, I'm not having another one. No way am I having another child. So you're going to have to get rid of the second child and get rid of the boyfriend or leave. Your choice. So one day, Dr. Bernardo's came after the second child was born to take the second child away. And one day, the boy's father came knocking on the door, and they never answered the door, and the boy's father walked away, never to be seen again. I am the first boy in that story, and I've struggled all the years in my life with issues of abandonment and rejection. As a five-year-old, it was probably about 5 or 6 year-old, something like that. I remember rooting around the house, you know, like you did, you know, kind of rooting, you know, looking at in different places. And one day I found this certificate, and on the certificate it said Michael John South. And so I took the certificate and I showed it to my grandmother. And I said, who's Michael John South? And she snatched it away from me and said, that's nothing to do with you. And later I was to find out that I was Michael John South, not Michael Harvey, as I am today. So I'd had a sibling taken away, a father taken away, and my name taken away. And so kind of one day I was given the choice whether I wanted to go and live with my mother and her husband. And by the way, the reason that my grandmother was not very happy was that Orrick was Jamaican. And so in those days, it wasn't particularly kind of a good, you know, kind of thing to be seen in this manner. But eventually my mother marries a white man and my grandmother is very, very happy indeed. And I'm given a choice at the age of 5, 6 years of age, whether I want to live with my grandmother or my mother. So I lived with my grandmother. So I never lived with my mother. Never knew my father. My name is not Michael Harvey. But at the age of 8, my mother came to call for me. And she said, you're coming to church. And so my mother invited me to church at the age of 8. And at the age of 11, I met my spiritual father. And I remember meeting him for the first time. He's called Frank. He was the youth leader in the church that I was invited to. And I remember the very first thing that Frank said to me. He said, Michael, if you start coming on a Sunday evening, you qualify for the church football team. Football? Really? Oh, okay. So I started coming on a Sunday evening. And then a few weeks later, he said, Michael, on a Friday evening, we've got this thing called Bible Club. After Bible Club, we play table tennis. Table tennis started going on a Friday evening. A few years later, he said, do you know that passage we were studying tonight? Next week, could you say something about that passage? Me? Yeah. You. And then he used to take me when he went preaching in different places. And I used to read the lesson and he used to preach. And then one time, after we've been doing this for quite a while, he said, oh, Michael, I've double booked myself. Can you go and preach? Me? What am I supposed to preach about? Well, that we've been preparing for the past 6 months. He was sneaky. It's very sneaky indeed. You know, invites all the way along the line. You know, I don't know where I would be without that first invitation from my mother. You know, where would I be without a spiritual father who invited me and continued to invite me? You know, invitation, it appears to me, to be utterly, you know, kind of central to the God that we have. You know, a God who is inviting us to become who we're meant to be. Not just on a one-off thing, but on a continuous basis. And so this morning, I just wanted to really have a look at the passage that we read together from John chapter 1. See if I can get this working, maybe. If the first slide, that'd be great. In the passage, it's got this really intriguing phrase. It says, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who'd followed Jesus. It says, the first thing. The first thing that Andrew did was to set up a worship group that released an album and went into the Christian charts at number one. Oh no, he didn't do that, did he? Very naughty for not doing that. No, it says the first thing that Andrew did was he set up a social organization to look after the poor. Oh no, he didn't do that either. Also very naughty. No, the first thing he said that he did was to set up Burwell Baptist Church. Oh no, he didn't do that. Also very naughty. No, he said the first thing that Andrew did was he went to invite his brother. And I honestly wonder, you know, with all the brilliant things that we do in Christianity today, you know, in this country and worldwide, and we do some magnificent things, just without which, you know, the society would be in such a terrible, terrible state. But I wonder, have we forgotten the first thing? The first thing, the first response was one of invitation. And you know, like in this particular situation here, is you don't actually know who you're actually inviting, who that person is going to be. But if you look, you know, later on this passage, he says, you know, invites Simon. And then Jesus says, you are Simon, but you will be called Cephas. And invitation leads to transformation. That's what happens. That is at the heart of Christianity, is God loves us so much that he doesn't want to leave us in our present position. And that is why God is always inviting us to become more than we presently are. So have we forgotten, you know, the first thing? But however, somebody said introducing your friend to church is a bit like a boy taking his girlfriend home to meet his parents for the first time. My son Ben, at the age of 16, started going out with Emily. After 3 or 4 weeks of this, I approached his mother, my wife of course, and I said, don't you think it's time we met Emily? Well, negotiations of international proportions took place. And after a couple of days, Ben came to me and he said, Dad, Emily's coming on Tuesday. Behave. And before we do any of this inviting stuff, you know, we need to be going around this congregation going, behave, behave. And in fact, can you stay away on that day? This whole thing is fraught, you know, with all sorts of difficulty. But what does it take What does it actually take to become a church that is not just welcoming? You know, and I love the welcome rotas. It's fantastic, isn't it? Not my week for welcoming rota. Fantastic rota you've got there. But, you know, but for Burwell Baptist to be known not just as a welcoming church, but a welcoming and inviting church. That we just insert the, you know, inviting into how we actually describe ourselves. You know, I don't think welcoming is good enough anyway. You know, I think, you know, we're a church that seeks to help people become who they're meant to be in Christ. And sometimes that's not very welcoming at all. So the three things in this passage that I think might help us to become an invitational church. Firstly, to become an invitational church, you've got to have hunger. In verse 37, it says, when the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. They had hunger. Now, the reason I'd say that is because there's loads of people, would you Adam and Eve it, loads of people who met Jesus and didn't follow Jesus. Can you believe it? I mean, it's a cracking thought, isn't it? You know, kind of, there's Jesus, you know, kind of the Son of God, wandering around teaching, and loads of people did not follow Jesus. But these two did. And they had something different. They had hunger. They had hunger. And I think to actually become an invitational church, unfortunately, you know, we've got to want it quite badly, really. You've got to really want that thing badly. So, frankly, how bad do you want your church to grow? How bad have you got it? And I just leave that question there, because, you know, we can come along and we can worship and having a lovely time, but where is the hunger? Because it's dead easy, isn't it, in worship to sing, you know, as the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you. Easy to sing it, and then on a Monday when God nudges us to invite somebody, we go, you must be joking, I'm not going to be doing that. See, where is our hunger? Now, all of us have got different levels of hunger. So to develop hunger, I use the dig into it deeper technique. So I'm going to show you a slide, and on this slide there are a number of squares. I want you to shout out, as soon as you can, how many squares you see. So, I've got the instructions there. Shout out as quickly as you can how many squares you see. For those of you who are very precise, I've tried my hardest to get squares here. This is a government initiative to get Baptist congregations counting on a Sunday morning. Yeah, well done for the shouting out, everybody. Fantastic. This is just... certainly not got rid of the fear. But anyway, it's kind of... good to know. Listen, let me put you out your misery here, if you were in any. So, of course, you've got 16. You see, Christianity is a little bit like that. You know, when we look at Christianity, at times we can go, yeah, 16. Yeah, got that sorted. But we can look at a verse, let's say 6 months ago, come to it today and see something different in that verse. You know, there's just something about actually, as you continue to grow, you develop, you know, there's something more. There's more in Christianity than meets the eye. So, of course, you've got 17 on the outside, 18 in the middle. Then you've got 19, 20. Then you've got 21, 22. Then you've got 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30. Now, if anybody does see any more, either see me after or see a psychiatrist, because I've counted all of those, and people try and say there's more than that. But sometimes we say about Christianity, yeah, I got that sorted out, yeah, I've got it, no, I understand it, yeah, but it's more. But the thing is, you've got to have a hunger to actually see the more. And what I was saying yesterday about invitation, you know, we all think invitation is about us inviting people, and that's the end of the story. Whereas I was making the case that actually it's God who invites us to invite, not just for the sake of the person who we're going to invite, but for our sake as well. There's a real depth to Christianity as we continue to go in our relationship with God. So frankly, to become an invitational church, we've got to have hunger. We've got to have hunger. Secondly, we've got to dream. We've got to dream. In verse 50, it says this, you shall see greater than that. You shall see greater than that. So to become an invitational church, we have to dream. We have to imagine in advance what is going to happen. Imagination is an attribute of God. Let there be. Let there be. I wonder what your let there be is. Let there be. Imagination is an attribute of God. When I was putting this together, I was trying to think, what would be my let there be for you? So, let there be hundreds more finding relationship with God through you. I'd like to put thousands. You know, is there any chance of me just, you know... But this is mine. You know, this is my, you know, kind of dream for you. The question is what is your dream for you? You know, what were we expecting today to see 20 invited guests? Or actually, is our dream, our expectations much lower than that at this moment in time? Cherish your visions, your ideas, your dreams. This isn't just about invitation. This is about life. God gives us dreams. God gives us dreams and visions. And sometimes we put them off till some point in the future. If you don't cherish your visions and dreams, nobody else will. Nobody else will. And I would say to the leadership and the eldership of this church, lead from your imagination, not from your memory. We learn from the past, definitely, but we lead from God's future. What God has got for us in the future. So we pull from the future into the present. Do you know, before this building was built, part of it, I know, is with Clunch. I've been going, thank you, yes, I've got my local stuff sorted. Before this building was built, somebody saw it before it was built. You know, it's seen before the thing is built. And you know, churches are really good, you know, when building something new, you know, get the architect in, you know, we, you know, imagine what it's going to look like. The ladies look at the kitchen and say, no, much bigger than that. You know, we've done this kind of stuff before, but we don't do it with people. You know, we don't, you know, kind of get the architect in and say, we want to design what the people part of the church is going to look like, how we're actually going to build that. We haven't got a picture closely enough in view. We need to lead from our imagination, not from our memory. So if you could do anything, make any contribution, what would it be? You see, whilst we've still got breath in our bodies, God is still calling us to do something. So what's your dream? What's your imagination? When I ask people, of my age in their 20s, When I ask people what they would like to do, they go all dreamy-eyed on me, and they go, oh, I'd love to do this. I say, that's fantastic. Why don't you go and do it? And they say, naughty, Michael. I say, why am I naughty? Well, they say, well, have you never heard of the word mortgage? Oh, yeah, I have. I have. It's that Latin word, isn't it? Mort, death, gauge, grip. I've heard of that word where we're deferring our God-given dreams to some point in the future where we've got everything sorted out. There are people in our country in jobs that they don't want to be in, but too afraid to move because of the mortgage. I mean, how many lives are we living here? No. God has placed a dream, an individual dream, in the hearts and the minds of each person. This is not just about invitation. This is about God's vision and dream to individuals and also to the church. So if you could do anything, make any contribution, what would it be? My dream, the reason I'm here today, in the midst of clunch. I love that word. It's fantastic. No idea what it means, but anyway. My dream is a million Christians inviting a million friends in a day. That's my dream. That's my dream. The question is what's your dream? I've been at this dream now for 11 years. Every single year failed. It seems to be getting worse and worse at this moment in time. But it's my dream that God has given to me. Now, look, it may not happen until after I'm dead. But I will do what God is calling me to do in this area. The question is what is God calling you to do? You see, I think the graveyard contains some of the greatest dreams that have never happened. So what is it? What's holding us back having a go? So you've got a dream. So if you're going to become an invitational church, not only have you got a hunger and desire to kind of go for this, but you've got to have a dream. What you're actually going for here. And the third and final thing in this passage is that you've got to resolve. You've got to resolve. In verse 46, it says, Nazareth, can anything good come from there? And Philip says, come and see. You've got to resolve. As soon as you get your dream out, somebody's going to come along and absolutely try and take it down. I can't tell you how many times, I've had my dream attacked. I'm not saying it's on a daily basis, but on a regular basis, having my dream attacked. And I think it's the same for all of us, that God gives us dreams and somebody comes along and actually tells us why we can't possibly have it. So you've got to resolve, On the day of Pentecost, the day the church was born, some made fun of them. And I noticed yesterday some of the reasons why we're not going to do any inviting. And by the way, relax, everybody. 80 to 95% of us, no intention of inviting. So relax, it's fine. Everybody calm, it's fine. But one of the reasons that we weren't going to actually do it from yesterday was of the possibility that we might get ridiculed, or shunned. Well, can I tell you now, on the day the church was born, they were laughing at the church and saying things at the church. Good news, eh? We're going back to early church times. Absolutely kind of fantastic. But the difference here was that Peter stood up. He resolved. Tough times don't last. Tough people do. Tough people do. Jesus went to the wilderness to be tested. No test, no testimony. Really? You know, and it's great having a testimony from 20, 30, 40 years ago, but what's our testimony from last week? No test, no testimony. The 11th commandment has just been found in Ely just over the weekend to be announced tomorrow. Thou shalt not quit. I love adding to scripture. There's things that should be in that are not in. We'll put it into Hezekiah chapter 3 verse 16. All important verses go there. Thou shalt, even though if it doesn't say that, that's the implication here. When we give reasons that we're not going to do it, we've quit. We've quit. Sorry to show you this at this time in the morning. Is everybody okay? We don't need St. John's Ambulance, do we? So for those of you who don't know who this is Shane Warne. It's not Shane Warne's hair, but Shane Warne. He's had a hair transplant. That's what I'm saying. I'm not jealous, but he's had a hair transplant. When he retired from Test Match Cricket, England started winning Ashes series. It's a marvellous moment. Parties were held throughout the land. But the absolute rotter that Shane Warne is, every time an Ashes series came around, he threatened to come out of retirement. So the only thing we could do was to send our secret agent, Liz Hurley, to sort the situation. So what on earth has Shane Warne got to do with this whole thing about, you know, resolving, etc., etc.? Well, I looked up his test match stats. In test match cricket, Shane Warne has actually taken 708 test match wickets. The greatest test match wicket-taking bowler Australia have ever produced. But in test match cricket, he's also bowled 40,000 balls. That's 39,892 balls of failure. Still considered the greatest test match wicket-taking bowler Australia have ever produced. He took a wicket every 55 to 56 balls bowled. Now, I'm not saying it's going to take 55 invites before we get a yes, but we do need to do some thinking about ratios. Sower goes out to sow the seed. Plural. Some of the seed falls on the path. Oh dear, we need a new initiative. No, we don't. The success of the sower was he kept on sowing. The success of Shane Warne was he kept on bowling. I mean, I think God has an appalling record in the area of invitation. Appalling. Sorry to say this, you know, in front of the Lord, but appalling. You know, how many times does he invite us to do things and we go, you must be joking, I'm not doing it. But, you know, kind of God invites Moses to invite Pharaoh to Alpha in Egypt. No, it's not right. God invites Moses to invite Pharaoh to let the people go free 10 times. 10 times. This is God. Yet we need to get a yes every time we actually invite. No, he bowled more balls of failure than any Australian test match bowler. So I'll tell you the kind of the simple sentence for Burwell Baptist Church. We're not hearing enough no's. It is really simple. We're not hearing enough people say no. What happens is more no's. actually lead to the yeses. But all the good stuff is in the no's for us. All the good stuff is in the no's. This is what I call the invitation clock. And I didn't do it yesterday because I wanted to do it today. The invitation clock. You know, some people we meet are at 12 o'clock in their relationship with God. They're not yet coming to church. But anything that you say to them, they will say yes to an invitation to church. So you might say to them, you won't want to come to my church. It's a bit rubbish. I don't know why I go. But do you fancy going? And they will say yes. And the reason they'll say yes is that they're at 12 o'clock in their relationship with God. There's nothing you can do about it. Sorry. God got there before you. You know, kind of, sometimes these things happen. I do apologize. They are at 12 o'clock in their relationship with God. There are some people who are at 3 o'clock in their relationship with God. And when you meet them, it'll go like this. Would you like to come to church with me? And they'll go, what, me? Me? Church? You must be joking. In fact, when did you start going to church and your lifestyle? So at 3 o'clock, it's going to be a bit horrendous, really. But they are at 3 o'clock in their relationship with God. You just had the privilege of hearing their ongoing conversation with God. And by the way, so did they. There are some people who are at 6 o'clock in their relationship with God. And when you meet them, it'll go like this. Would you like to come to church with me? And they'll say, actually, I've been thinking about this for some time. And you go, yes. But you're all hypocrites. Every single last one of you, all of you, hypocrites. They're at 6 o'clock in their relationship with God. You just had the privilege of hearing their ongoing conversation with God. And by the way, so did they. Better out than in. Better out than in. There are some people who are at 9 o'clock in their relationship with God. And when you meet them, would you like to come to church with me? And they'll say to you, when is it? And you think to yourself, has the country gone to such rack and ruin that they don't know when church is? But you control your stress response. Relax. And you say, Sunday? They say, busy. At 9 o'clock, they're busy. You know what it's like. Mum, taxi, dad, taxi, football, rugby, cricket, swimming. You know, busy. They're not again an invitation. They're just at that stage of life, busy. They're at 9 o'clock in their relationship with God. Some people who are at 11 o'clock in their relationship with God, they are so close to saying yes. And when you invite them, they say, I'm not quite ready, but could you invite me again? You see, as you go inviting, you will meet all of these people along the clock face. They're all there waiting to be invited. But the really great news is this. As you invite them, I believe you move them along the clock face closer to in a relationship to God. No invitation returns void. It may take ages, but nothing returns void with God. And so you've got to resolve. You've got to resolve. If you're going to become an invitational church, you've got to resolve. And so we've seen in the passage, hunger, dream, and resolve. I wonder, you know, as I leave to go back to Manchester, to Lancashire. Oh, missed it so much this weekend. You've been marvellous. But as I go back, I wonder, do I leave a church that could possibly become the first church in Cambridgeshire to become an invitational church that has a characteristic of hunger, dream, and resolve? And then maybe we can get back to the first thing. Amen.